For a long time, I felt guilty when I jumped straight to high fidelity, like I was being a bad designer by skipping a necessary part of the process. And that's why this idea from Gabe Valdivia really stuck with me.
You should be able to share an update on the work every day, every other day, definitely every week. So if it takes you 2 weeks to come back with a prototype, that's too slow. Like, you should have shared napkin sketch.
It's so common to hear designers talk about fidelity levels based on where they're at in the design process. That's why it's so refreshing to hear Gabe anchor on speed.
You can give yourself the luxury of creating a higher fidelity prototype or artifact if you have become fast enough to do that. If not, then give me a wireframe. Right? Like, I need to be reacting to something often and bringing people along with me often. Otherwise, I'm not ready to focus on origami prototypes. I'm just not fast enough. I'm not ready. I got to go back to practicing on my own until I'm ready to bring that to my professional world. So that to me is like the cost of doing something high fidelity. If I can make a perfect prototype, you know, within 30 minutes, I'd do that. That's the goal.
This mental model where fidelity is a function of speed came up when Dennis, the founder of AIMEE, was describing how he collaborates with their design engineer, Stefan.
It can be a gray box prototype, like a gray box mockup, just layout, where do things go? It can be a little bit more high fidelity, but like overall it's, you know, whatever you can get done in half a day. That is the fidelity.
Too many designers view high fidelity as the thing that you work toward as you narrow in on your ideas. Almost like you don't want to make too many high fidelity explorations because it's wasteful. But I think that's why we can learn a lot from the early Facebook culture.
I think that's where the Facebook upbringing comes in, where there was a lot of work being done there to create really high fidelity prototypes really quickly to validate ideas. So I think that paired up with that artifact first mentality allows us to, you know, get out of the abstract land of like, should we do this? Should we do that? Let's do this and that, and let's do both at a high fidelity and then react.
I'm going to underline the word react because I don't know about you, but I've been told this story where when we show designs that are higher fidelity, it's easier for stakeholders to get distracted and hung up on things that don't matter. And there's definitely some truth to that, but I think it's also easy to ignore something that just feels a little bit off because it's lower fidelity. Almost trusting that it'll get ironed out later in the process. And that's why I like this idea from Gavin Nelson, where he talks about his experience designing the Linear mobile app.
Even in the early stages, when you're trying to prototype an interaction and just quickly validate a decision, the higher fidelity a prototype is in some ways, the exponentially more useful it becomes.
Now, before we go further, I do want to pause and define our terms just a little bit here, because there are different types of high fidelity prototypes. So let's take a second to hear from Nicholas Klein, who is leading the design of the prototyping features in Figma.
When you're demoing a prototype to any use case, to a developer, to designers, to stakeholders in a product review, if you know the story of what you want to tell, then it's closer to you building a presentation than to building a quote-unquote prototype. And it still is a prototype, I would say, right? But you know exactly where to click. And there's this other part where somebody else opens this thing and you want to see what they do, what they play with, what they actually feel. And you need to somehow find a way that this thing feels real, that this fourth wall in a way is kept up. At that moment, you get the realistic responses back to them. And for those cases, compared to those single path level of fidelity, you essentially need a multi-path level of fidelity because you don't know yet which direction the user is going to pick, because that's exactly the thing you want to test. So comparing it to the story kinds of fidelities and the multi-path kinds of fidelities where you want to test which path users end up going into and which path users end up being stuck, I would say that like if you land on something on the latter side, learning how variables work, how variant binding works and how it can help you set up those prototypes more efficiently is definitely helpful.
Real quick message and then we can jump back into it. For years, I've been paying for third-party website analytics, but I can finally cancel those subscriptions because Framer just released their all-new analytics dashboard. It's built into every plan, and it's even fully GDPR compliant without the need for a cookie banner. That way, you can get a complete breakdown of how your site is performing, including live visitor activity, bounce rates. You can see breakdowns by country, device, and even get a glimpse into referrers and UTM sources. You can then filter data automatically by clicking on any of the individual metrics, like users on a desktop who found your site through Google. It's super powerful, but most importantly, it's built directly into your dashboard, so you can't beat that. It's just another reason why I tell everyone to use Framer for their next website. And you can start using it today. Just head to dive.club/Framer. There is so much more to good design than what it looks like. It's also how it feels and functions. And look, I can accomplish a lot in Figma, but there's still a ceiling there, which is why I'm so excited about Play 2.0. It allows you to create ultra-realistic prototypes because for the first time, you can design interactions with native iOS gestures and Apple's core animation. So your prototypes feel real because they are real, which is why so many of the best designers that I know are all using Play to design and prototype their mobile apps. So if you want to join them, head to dive.club/play to get started today. Okay, now on to the episode. Now, I've taught advanced prototyping to literally thousands of designers through Figma Academy, and you can accomplish some really powerful stuff, but there's a trend that I notice where designers by default want to make the most functional prototype possible at all times. But that's really only valuable when you need a multi-path prototype and you're trying to keep up this fourth wall, as Nico talks about. Otherwise, it becomes really low ROI pretty quickly. So I don't want that to be your takeaway, because sometimes it's just about imagining the future and casting vision. And in that world, high fidelity is often a more natural way to explore outside of the realm of the obvious solutions. Here's Michael Wandelmeyer sharing how MetaLab likes to start their projects.
To give designers ultimate freedom in a first couple of days to be unconstrained by requirements or even like a hard specific goal, and just envision in high fidelity the most natural way to express yourself, concepts for what the product might be. And the funny thing is that that changes dramatically the conversation around what we think is possible. Often, you know, the perceived barriers to doing something really cool are mostly in your mind, and you self-censor and do more conservative or pragmatic solutions.
And a lot of times the way to uncap these early explorations and really figure out what is possible is to start exploring in code too. Here's Jenny Wen sharing about the process of building FigJam.
We actually usually have engineers work closely and they sort of build out this first version. And they build the first version out with sort of this expectation that, you know, it might actually change. This isn't like the final thing. And we actually see engineering as a part of the process of iterating and refining and whatnot. And I think at a lot of other teams, the norm is that, you know, if it gets built and it changes, it's sort of like throwaway work and it's a waste of time. But we actually see that as it's not a waste of time. It sort of moves the project forward and it's a part of the design process.
Now, speaking of Jenny, she wrote one of my favorite articles of 2024 called Don't Trust the Design Process. And I share it pretty much all the time. I'll include it in the show notes so you can find it for yourself. But I want to end this episode by taking just a couple minutes to read it to you today, because I think that it's something that every designer should hear. She says, for a good period of time between like 2014 to 2020, design was all about the process. Instead of portfolios or mockups or prototypes, it was all these artifacts, journeys, flows, personas, user stories, proof of the process. And our output started looking more like this. We stopped caring so much about the actual design of the thing, what people actually saw or felt when they used the thing that we made, and we self-indulged in all of the practice of design. And I get why we did this. 10 or 15 years ago, most designers were traditionally graphic designers, and a lot of early software design focused on just making something pretty and shiny. But designing software was complex. You had a real human being on the other side, interacting with a complex system in a multitude of ways you couldn't anticipate. All of a sudden, we weren't just designing something visual, but we needed to understand human behavior, to see ourselves in other people's context. Don't get me started on our empathy phase. To learn how the decisions we made could affect a company's bottom line, etc. But along the way, we lost something. The actual work we were producing. We spent so much time trying to decode our users in so many ways. A persona, then a journey, then a user flow, then a lo-fi wireframe, then a concept test. We focused on it so much that we deemed the pixels unserious and unimportant. We stopped doing the real thing that would be the most empathetic and that would actually serve business outcomes best, building stuff that worked well and that people would love. We became servants to the process, following it step by step every single time, saying stuff like, trust the process. We made designers feel like their work wasn't complete if they didn't start from a perfectly articulated problem statement. The way I've seen great work made isn't using any sort of design process. It's skipping steps when we deem them unnecessary. It's doing them out of order just for the heck of it. It's backtracking when we're unsatisfied. It's changing things after we've handed off the design. It's starting from the solution first. It's operating on vibes and intuition. It's making something just for the sake of making people smile. It's a feeling that we nailed it. It's knowing how to bend the process in your favor. It's the sense to know how to keep making your work better. And it's a clear, unwavering ideal of what good looks like. It's messy, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Hopefully you enjoyed that as much as I did. And again, I'll include the link in the show notes so you can save it for yourself. And it's a good example of the type of resources that I like to share in the Dive Club newsletter. So if you're not getting those emails, I definitely recommend heading to dive.club/email to sign up. And I will see you next week.
Hey, it's Rid. Don't forget, if you want to go even deeper, each week I send an email out to over 10,000 designers with bonus resources and key takeaways from these conversations. So head to dive.club/email to sign up. Okay, I'll see you next week.